Will the clerk please call the first case?
225-0093 WC Jose Avila Appellee by Christopher Williams versus the Illinois Workers' Compensation Commission et al. I Deliver Logistics Appellant by Colin Mills.
Mr. Mills, you may proceed.
Good morning, Justices. May it please the court, Mr. Williams. My name is Colin Mills, and I represent the defendant appellant in this matter, I Deliver Logistics. We're here this morning seeking a reinstatement of the unanimous decision of the commission in which it found that plaintiff appellee, Mr. Avila, did not sustain an accident that arose out of his employment as it was not against the manifest weight of the evidence. There's more than a sufficient factual basis for the commission's decision in this case, and the circuit court failed to show that the commission's decision lacked any rational basis. And instead, the circuit court substituted its own judgment for that of the commission, which was improper. Then there's an abundance of competent evidence in the record to support the commission's decision, namely here the video footage. And simply put, it can't be said that no reasonable, rational person couldn't agree with the commission's decision. Obviously, as this court knows, and as we know, great deference must be given to the commission's findings, especially with respect to factual matters such as witness credibility and the weight given to the evidence. Using its own words, the commission found the video evidence in this matter to be overwhelmingly persuasive when coming to its decision. My opponent argues that different inferences could be drawn from the same evidence, which of course we disagree with, but in any event, that's not the proper test. And we believe that the record fails to support the conclusion or position that an opposite conclusion would have been the proper finding. As to the case itself, you know, the commission unanimously found that, you know, we have a traveling employee who took himself out of the course and scope of his employment by way of his own rashness and anger. The events of August 1 of 2023 were set in motion due solely to the plaintiff's own actions as shown in the video evidence and relied upon by the commission. Despite the plaintiff's attempts to spin what we see in the videos, and more importantly, what the commission panel saw in the videos, the evidence in the record speaks for itself and certainly more than sufficient to support the commission's determination that plaintiff's actions as the aggressor on the date of accident were not reasonable and foreseeable. For example, what we see in the video is we see the plaintiff honk at a car that pulls into a driveway in front of him. Plaintiff then chooses to stop his van instead of merely driving away. Instead, he decides to speak and yell in a contentious, animated, heated fashion, I would say, to the individuals that are outside of the van, mouthing what appear to be profanities and obscenities and making threats. Plaintiff makes nonverbal hand gestures to the individuals outside of the van. He forcibly removes his seatbelt to exit the van of his own accord. And after he returns to the van, after the initial altercation, he continues to make verbal and nonverbal gestures and signals to those outside of the van. On the other hand, there's nothing to support that the individuals outside of the vehicle were unloading groceries or that any of the plaintiff's actions were aimed at looking out for anyone's interests or safety. The plaintiff's own report to the insurance company, to CCMSI, in his recorded statement that he was physically pulled from the van at the beginning of the altercation, which he then admitted at arbitration was not truthful, was not supported by the video evidence. The plaintiff's testimony that he had to brake the van suddenly at the beginning of the altercation so as to avoid the car pulling in the driveway, that's not supported by the video evidence. His testimony that the individual in the car that pulled into the driveway came at him aggressively and made a beeline towards him is not supported by the video evidence. Plaintiff's testimony that the roadway wasn't clear, which was prohibiting him from blocking him from simply driving away at the onset of the events, was not supported by the video evidence. In total, the record supports the finding that the plaintiff was the aggressor and the sole cause of the events that occurred on August 1 of 2023. The behavior wasn't reasonable. He made repeated choices that escalated the conflict that he created in the first place. Rather than avoid it, he chose not to drive away, chose to stop, honk, shout at strangers, and exit his vehicle for a direct confrontation, and by yelling at strangers even more when returning to his vehicle.
Counsel,
employers would.
Counsel, let me jump in. You've described sort of a road rage, for lack of a better phraseology, incident. You've got what is an argument between people out there. How close would they have gotten to one another during this argument? What do you read from the record?
I'm not sure I understand what you mean
physically,
by how close they would have gotten.
Physically, you're saying that they approach one another. How close do they get to one another?
Well, they come to blows outside of the van after the plaintiff leaves the van.
Well, that's my next question. When they were together arguing, who touches the other first?
I've watched this video many times. It's hard to say if the gentleman outside comes first and the plaintiff raises his arm, or if it's sort of the other way around. But I don't know that that necessarily makes a difference. As the commission said, you know, that who throws the first punch is not necessarily the aggressor. And I think that, as the commission found unanimously by their review, that the plaintiff was the aggressor in this action by way of his verbal threats and the way that he acted in creating and escalating this, and that a physical altercation doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, the factor as to who the aggressor is. I think it's clear that the plaintiff was the aggressor just by looking at his actions.
You said that the plaintiff, by his verbal threats, was the aggressor. What threats were made by him initially?
Well, I think as you watch the video, and he initially, you know, honks the horn. He says, you know, you can read his lips. I think the commission, you know, agreed that he was shouting profanities. Come on, you know, looks to be starting a fight, yelling profanities as to what, you know, maybe he's going to do without me using those same profanities.
Was there audio on this videotape?
Was there audio? No, Justice, there's no audio.
Well, is
but it.
Yeah, go ahead.
But I think it's clear, you know, and supported by the commission's finding as to, you know, he makes a shooting gun gesture with his hand. It looks like, you know, it says, you know, I'm gonna beat your ass. You know, I think is exactly what he says by reading his lips.
Okay, so the commission is lip readers then, and the arbitrator, right?
Pardon?
They're lip readers then, right?
Well, yeah, that's all we can do is look at the video that's in front of us.
Didn't the claimant testify? And excuse me if I have this wrong. They said something like, "You're lucky I can't get out," or something, you know, "you're lucky." So I just offer that. But my real question is, you've not described the period where he was injured. You've not touched upon that at all. Is that significant? Because the way I
read it,
they have this dust up and a back and forth. And then I think the whole thing hinges on the determination that after he drove away and he said, "You're lucky I'm not, you know, I can't fight you." And then, as I understand it, 4 minutes passed. Then he clearly, then it what the whole thing lies on from your point of view is that it naturally follows that after that naturally these combatants, or, you know, the driver, as he's called, is going to enlist three Confederates, get into a different car, follow the claimant to a different delivery, and 4 minutes later, jump him, beat him, and rob him of his chain. And that, so all of that was fomented by, and the causal connection is unbroken, according to you. All of it's fomented by the plaintiff, or excuse me, the claimant.
Yeah, that's correct. And the commission, that was the commission's finding as well, unanimously. And to the first part of your question as to what the plaintiffs testified that he mouthed as, you know, you're lucky I can't do this or that, the commission found the plaintiff's not credible. Your second point, it is extremely important. The second stage of the incident, I guess he'll call it, is where the injuries were sustained. And I think that clearly it's the same. It stems from the first one. If his aggressive
There's no natural action, break. There's no break.
I don't believe there's a natural break at all because
because thing, naturally they're going to jump in their car and follow him. It's just
they
predictable.
Told him well, according to the plaintiff, they told him at the onset of the initial altercation they were going to follow him. So that would make sense that it would be one continuous altercation if the plaintiff was told, as he testified, that they were going to follow.
So even if they said that they were going to follow him, let me ask just a follow-up on that. Even if they said that they were going to follow him, and doesn't by his leaving the area, I mean, how long does he have to be traveling away from the initial area of confrontation before there is a break? I mean, is it 4 blocks? Is it 4 miles? Is it 4 cities away? I mean, he left the scene of the initial situation, and then there was nothing requiring anyone else to follow him to continue the fight. He didn't invite them to come someplace. Hey, I'll meet you at the park. You know, I'll meet you on the recess playground. Nothing like that. So, I mean, how can we not determine that he left the initial confrontation and anything after that is a separate incident?
Well, I think that it's a question of fact and it's a case by case basis. And the commission found unanimously here that there was evidence to support that it was one altercation. The same individuals followed him. It was only 4 minutes later. It was the very next stop. You know, the plaintiff says in his brief that he was attacked by assailants from an unfamiliar vehicle. The vehicle, the maroon sedan, is in the video from the first incident. We've got the same actors, at least maybe not.
Well, Mr. Mills, I mean, you know, I think your focus is on the wrong actor. The actor here is the claimant and what he did. And the claimant walked away because he had a job to do, right? He wasn't going to, so, oh, well, I think I'll go do my job now and then maybe I'll get back to this fight. He went to do his job. He went to make a delivery. So, I mean, I don't see how anybody, any rational person looking at that could conclude that that this wasn't a natural break.
I don't think it ever broke. He was told by his own testimony that he was going to be followed to the next place. This never even starts in the first place.
What does it matter what the aggressor said? What matters is what the claimant did, right? The claimant went about his job.
The claimant drove to his next stop.
That's his job.
It is his job. Okay, absolutely.
Right. He made a delivery.
In a melee that he created.
He made his delivery.
Yes, he went and made his next delivery. The very next stop, and the same people that he instigated and started a melee with followed him as they told him they were going to do at the very beginning, according to his own testimony.
So, well, under your arrest, now it doesn't matter then what the claimant may have done afterwards. Anything that followed that initial incident would all be chalked up to the claimant as the aggressor, because he's the one who made the hand gesture, and he's the one who mouthed something to the assailants.
Yes, the commission found the claimant was clearly the aggressor in this case, and the melee that ensued afterward was a direct result of his own actions.
So he invited conduct. Basically, the commission says if you invite a beating, that's okay.
Well, if you're the aggressor in an altercation to which you've sustained injuries, then it's not compensable. And that's the situation that we have here. So we're asking that the commission's decision be reinstated as it wasn't against the manifest weight of the evidence, and that the claim be denied based on the able to show that the accident arose out of his employment.
Okay. Any questions, further questions from the bench? None. Okay, counsel, you will have time to reply.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Williams, you may respond.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Chris Williams. I represent the appellee plaintiff, Jose Avila. As stated in my brief, we agree that with the circuit court that the commission's decision was against the manifest weight of the evidence. We also contend that the commission's analysis regarding whether he was the aggressor was misguided. The case law regarding the aggressor exception for workplace fights focuses on exclusively on fights between employees on the employer's premises. I believe the correct analysis for our case is that of a traveling employee. And as we know, a traveling employee is exposed to risks of the street, and the arising out of prong is more broadly construed. An injury is compensable if the employee's conduct was reasonable and foreseeable. In our case, Avila was going about his ordinary workday delivering packages for his employer. His conduct was reasonable and foreseeable. The incident, which...
Well, let's examine that.
Sure.
Okay. So what's the risk of the street here?
The risk of the street here, I believe, is being attacked by strangers, frankly.
Okay. So we're focusing at what point in time? The first point in time when he was struck outside the van, or the second point in time when he was making the delivery four
both.
Or five?
I think both, Your Honor.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Justice Holdridge.
Well, no, go ahead, Justice Barberis. That's fine.
Well, my question is this. If the second incident at the second location never happened, and assume for a moment that the beating that he took place at the initial stop and location, based on, and then everything else in the fact pattern stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
Car swerves in front of him, cuts him off. He makes some gestures. He says whatever we think he says. And the person that cut him off gets out and beats him up. I think there was testimony that there were more than one person involved on behalf of the other driver. So two or three people get out and beat him up. Is that compensable? Is that something that is, you know, alleging or assuming that his gestures and his words, maybe, I don't know if they raise, I don't know that we know if they rise to an invitation to fight or a provocation to fight, but they were angry words. Is that something that is compensable?
Absolutely. In our case, he was cut off. We have the benefit of the video in this case from both the interior and exterior view. And in the video, which is supplied by his employer, also includes a G-force meter across the bottom, which shows us exactly when he had to slam on the brakes when he was cut off. So, yeah, I mean, he reacted angrily, which I think is a foreseeable response to someone cutting you off in traffic. I mean, everyone drives, everyone sees that. What happens next is sort of, I think, ultimately where the commission got this the most wrong is he has someone who he testified told him he was going to follow him, correct? So the commission essentially says his only legitimate option was to drive away and avoid the situation entirely. In their decision, they specifically state that he could have driven away with no problems, that there were no people in front of him. I point out in my brief, and I gave you specific screenshots of the specific moment in time, at the moment that the gentleman gets out of his vehicle, the car, the driver, we'll call him, the very second, there is a woman directly in front of his van. So if he were to drive off, the only option for him is to hit that lady. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The video is clear. In addition, they talk about him angrily removing his seatbelt when the driver gets out of his car in a simultaneous action. Again, the video is clear. He pulls his seatbelt out when the gentleman is halfway to the truck. And we have to, we
but,
can see.
counsel?
Yes.
This lady that you're saying is in front of the van.
Right.
What do we know about the lady? Did she join somehow with this group?
No, I think she came, frankly, I think she came in, she saw what was happening, the fight, and I think she tried to break it up, frankly. I mean, I don't think we know for sure. She didn't testify, and but just from the view of it, when he gets cut off, she's entering the crosswalk. She's right at the corner near the grass. When he pulls his or puts the car into park, the van into park, she's directly in front of the vehicle in the middle of the crosswalk. So I don't know that she necessarily had anything to do with the fight itself. But his choices basically were one of three. Number one, drive through this woman who's in front of him. Number two, sit strapped into a seat with a wide open door with this guy walking violently towards you and be a sitting duck for an attack. Or the third option, which is what he did, which I think is the most prudent in this situation, is he exited the vehicle so he could defend himself. He exited the vehicle with his hands by his side, and he was immediately attacked. I know Mr. Mills says that he isn't sure who threw the first punch. I don't think there's any question by watching that video who threw the first punch in this situation. So yes, he was not the aggressor. That's just he.
Well,
he was,
but your opposing counsel says it's not who throws the first punch to determine who's the aggressor.
Correct.
So you want to address that?
Right. So this again, he. My client only got out of the van because of the situation. He wasn't trying to escalate the fight. He testified that he was not trying to fight. He was trying to talk to this gentleman to calm him down, frankly. So he did not get out in an aggressive manner. He got out to defend himself. I think that's fair. But no, he was not trying to start a fight. He probably would have driven away if there wasn't someone directly in front of his van. So then addressing the second incident, again, as the justice has pointed out, he was many blocks away, 4 minutes later, completing a different delivery. This is a pure risk of the street. He's taking a photograph with his phone of the delivery. His back is to the road. He's defenseless. He's vulnerable. And a new vehicle pulls up. And the initial driver he is in that vehicle, but there are three entirely new gentlemen who jump out, including the first person who jumps out and runs right at the claimant and starts attacking him. So to say that Avila's argument with the driver somehow opened him up to an attack in a vulnerable position 4 minutes later from people he'd had no interaction with previously defies logic, frankly. So this is a new attack. This is a new incident. And that is where he sustained his injuries anyway. So I don't think there's any way we can say that he was the aggressor in that situation, as he was simply making his delivery, going about his job, and he was stuck in a vulnerable position.
But Mr. Your opposing counsel says this is all one continuous situation.
Again, I don't know that it can be a continuous situation when there are three new assailants. I don't know how you can pin the claimant's actions with one gentleman 4 minutes prior to getting beat up by three other guys from a different car. And again, he did leave the scene. So even if, again, I'm not conceding that he was the aggressor in the first incident, but even if we do concede that, he's left the scene. He's gone about his job. He hasn't done anything threatening. He hasn't done anything to instigate any other altercations going forward. He's put himself in a vulnerable position. He's not defending himself. He's not, his head's not on a swivel. He's not, and he gets attacked. So it's absolutely a new accident or a new incident.
So Mr. Williams, I mean, you would acknowledge that there's a line of cases that hold that, you know, you don't need to be the, you don't have to throw the first punch to be the aggressor. And, you know, a lot of that would then turn on what was said, right? And I mean, I think your argument here is that the commission's decision was speculation because you don't know what was said in this case. There's no audio. Is that your argument?
Well, my argument is twofold. Number one, the aggressor case law all deals with two employees within an employer setting. So it's a question of whether this is a workplace altercation and whether the person who was injured was the instigator. And in those case, in every case that's cited, it goes much further than a couple words a few seconds before the altercation. We're talking about, you know, repeated threats, repeated actions over a period of time, and really quite violent threats before the
well, but, I mean, you could imagine if an assailant, you know, comes at you and says, "I'm going to kill you," and he's got his hands up, that a claimant who throws a first punch would not be considered the aggressor in that situation. But my point is this, that, you know, there might be some inferences to be drawn, but you can't draw any inferences here because we don't know what was said. And so what you have here is speculation.
We have speculation, but we also have clear video evidence that I think the commission makes it pretty clear in the decision that the only correct thing for him to do is drive away from the situation, not engage. And he simply couldn't drive away from the situation given the circumstance. So the aggressive person in this altercation was the gentleman who pulled into a driveway, jumped out of his car, left his door open, and marched straight towards the van. I think he was, just based on the totality of the circumstances, he's the aggressor here.
So even if we did, if we determine though that he's not entitled to any kind of compensation based on his failure to do as the commission suggests, leave immediately before the confrontation took place, after his angry words, but before he got hit, that still doesn't get around the fact that he was attacked in a second location by different people that were not necessarily, to my understanding, parties to the first confrontation. Did I hear you correctly? And correct me if I'm wrong. At the second location when he was struck from behind, that was not from the driver that struck him the first time. This was from one of the other three assailants. Is that correct?
Correct. The first person to jump out of that vehicle was a new person.
Okay. So that person wasn't even involved in the first incident.
He's not involved in the first
incident. Was he a passenger in the car?
There's no evidence. Yeah, it's unclear, but he's not seen in the first video.
So to the best of our knowledge, that individual never even received those angry words, wasn't on the receiving end of those angry words or gestures. He just decided there was a fight to be had and he wanted to be a part of it.
I think that's an accurate description. Yes.
Okay.
Did the commission, or did, was there any parsing out of the injuries sustained in the first stop versus the injuries when the claimant was involved in returning to his duties and delivering packages?
I don't think so, Judge. The first thing, I mean, he testified and the video, again, we have the benefit of the video. You can actually see his appearance between the two attacks. And he seems fine after the first attack, frankly. So he might have just had some bumps and bruises type injuries, which, you know, might not even, you know, rise to a level of a workers' comp case. And then after the second one, it's clear that's where he sustained his real injuries.
The first incident didn't result in him falling, right? He just got punched in the face, turned around and got in his van and left.
No, I think there was a little bit more than that. It was a scuffle for sure. But he's definitely sustained his injuries in the second accident, or the second incident. So to sum up, taking in the totality of the circumstances, Mr. Avila was not the aggressor. He was the victim of a bad situation. As a traveling employee, he's entitled to additional protections under the act. And the circuit court correctly found that the commission's decision was against the manifest weight of the evidence. And we are here asking for that decision to be affirmed. Thank you.
Any questions from the bench? No? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Thank you.
Counsel, you may reply.
Just a few things. I think that the commission's finding based on the video evidence, it's clear that the plaintiff was the aggressor in the incident that took place on this date of accident, and that his actions as the aggressor constitutes unreasonable and not foreseeable conduct, which, you know, as we know, traveling employee status doesn't validate unreasonable conduct and escalation. I think, as Justice Mullen asked the first time I was up, I think the case hinges on, you know, the totality of the circumstances. And as the commission found, the second incident doesn't happen, but for his own rashness, anger, actions as the aggressor, that started the melee of this day. It all stems from one incident. It's one continuous altercation. We have people that are involved in the first one, or at least present in the first one, that come to the second one. The maroon car is obviously involved, even though plaintiff says it's an unfamiliar vehicle. It was there twice. We've got the same folks. These weren't additional different people that showed up at the second address. They were the same folks from the first address that took place in the melee that the plaintiff started as the aggressor and through his unreasonable and not foreseeable conduct while delivering packages on the date of the accident. Based on the evidence contained in the record, again, we believe that the commission's unanimous decision was the right decision and not against the manifest weight of the evidence. And we ask that the circuit court decision be reversed and the commission's decision reinstated. Thank you.
Further questions from the court or counsels? Okay. Thank you, counsel, both for your arguments in this matter this morning. It will be taken under advisement. A written disposition shall issue. At this time, the clerk of our court will escort you out of our remote courtroom and we'll proceed to the next case.
Thank you.
Thank you.